from 90.1 WFYI Public Radio. Welcome to The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support from listeners like you. And from the Palladium at the Center for the Performing Arts, opening in January 2011.
Hello and welcome to The Art of the Matter. I'm Sharon Gamble. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Buscelli Wallerab Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
And I'm Travis DiNicola. Today I'll get a preview of the Talbot Street Art Fair.
I get to sit down and chat with philanthropist Frank Basile.
And I'll chat with the actor who plays Frankie Valli in Jersey Boys. Plus, there's our arts calendar we call What'll We Do?
All that and more right after the latest news from NPR. The 55th annual Talbot Street Art Fair will take place June 12th and 13th. With over 270 artists from across the nation, this juried art fair continues to be ranked as one of the finest fairs in the country. Travis DiNicola spoke with Joan Kisner, president of Talbot Street Art Fair, Inc., and with Dee Shod from their board of directors.
Joan, Dee, welcome to Art of the Matter. Pleasure to have you both here today.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And you are about to celebrate, what is this, the 155th Talbot Street Art Fair, or...
I feel like it is.
55th.
Just the 55th, yes.
Wow, that is still, that's amazing, though.
Isn't it, though?
Yes.
I think we're one of the longest running art fairs, continually running, probably in the nation.
I would have to think so. Now, do you, or I'm not suggesting that either of you were around for the first one 55 years ago, but can you tell me a bit about, as far as what you know about how it did get started, though?
It started with some Heron students. Mm-hmm. I believe they were actually graduates of Heron, and they decided just to get together for an art fair. And it started in Talbot Alley, which is still called Talbot Street, but it's south of 16th Street.
Okay.
And the spelling there is T-A-L-B-O-T, mm-hmm. and that's why there's just one T in the spelling of the art fair.
Oh, okay.
Even though we're now in Talbot.
Which is Talbot Street with two T's. Mm-hmm. So the Talbot Alley, so that was what, between like Pennsylvania and Delaware, below 16th?
Just exactly the same location, but just below, yes.
Okay. Is there even an alley there now? Or?
I'm not sure that there is,
yeah.
But it was like 13th and 14th Street.
Huh, okay. Mm-hmm. Okay, but then eventually it moved up to...
Yes, and it started with probably maybe 12, 13 people,
mm-hmm.
and then grew very rapidly, actually.
And originally, as you said, it really featured, it was Heron students,
mm-hmm.
But that's grown over the years. Now I believe you've got something like 270 artists this year?
Yes, we do.
Well, obviously not all from Heron.
No. From across the nation.
Mm-hmm. Well, tell me about that process.
The process, we send out applications, and mm-hmm. we also have them so you can download them from our website. And this is in late October. We jury usually the 1st of February,
mm-hmm.
and it is a juried art fair, so... People that are interested do submit applications to the fair, and then they are selected by a jury by qualification of their work. And booth slides are real important to see that their individual pieces that are really lovely
mm-hmm.
still match up with what they show in a fully stocked booth. And we hope that we've selected the right mm-hmm. ones and the right people and have a nice variety. So it's exciting.
Both local artists, but also from
all over the country. Oh, yes. We have a lot of local artists. Yes. And when we do the jury, it's like we don't know what they look like,
mm-hmm.
you know, anything about the people, actually. We just do the jurying and then hope that we've selected the best.
Now, with other art fairs in town, for example, Broad Ripple Art Fair was just a few weeks ago, great mm-hmm. event, Penrod, those are different fundraisers for different organizations as well. What does Talbot raise funds for? Is it sort of unto itself, or is it how does that work, Dee?
Well, Talbot Street is kind of an artist-run organization, and it's a nonprofit, but the money that turns out to be profit
mm-hmm.
is... usually distributed charitably to arts organizations. It's given away in the form of scholarships and programs for educational institutions and the like.
Yes.
And one thing that sets Talbot apart, of course, is that it is a free fair for the people that show up for it.
It's absolutely free to come and see the Talbot Street Art Fair.
Right. Now, the artists have, like, an artist fee or something that they pay.
They do.
Oh, the artists pay a fee,
sure,
yes.
Of course.
But it's a nice event. I mean, it's a cheap date. I tell my students they should all go to the Talbot Street Art Fair because you can spend the whole day there, have a great time. There's food and some entertainment, a mm-hmm. lot of art to see, and it doesn't cost you anything to get in.
So, absolutely.
That's
well, the entertainment's basically looking at the other people there.
Well, tell me about the food, because you can't have an art fair without food.
Actually, we're not responsible for the food. The Heron Morton Place Association, Neighborhood Association, is responsible for that, so we always hope that they're going to select the very best, mm-hmm. and they seem to do a pretty good job.
Sure, you have to partner very closely with
them.
We
do have to, yes. Oh, yes, yes. Mm-hmm. They've been really good hosts to us for the last, oh, goodness, probably 25, 30 years now.
You kind of take over their neighborhood a bit. So,
we do.
Yeah.
We do.
But what are the dimensions? I mean, you're above 16th Street.
We start at 16th, mm-hmm. and we now go all the way to 20th Street.
Okay.
And then we go off of Talbot to 17th over to Delaware, mm-hmm. 18th to Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. So we really have 6 blocks of art fair.
Yeah, yeah.
And considering, you know, we started maybe a half a block worth in the mm-hmm. alley. So yeah. We're pretty large.
Now, and how does that work with the residents as far as, you know, I mean, how do they participate or get involved or work with you? Or
the residents have been very, very good. I think they enjoy the fair themselves, mm-hmm. and they have been good hosts, all of them, because we are taking over their parking. They can't get into park for the whole weekend. Mm-hmm. And some of them actually, I think, do leave home.
Out of something. Oh, that's
understandable. But really, they have been very, very good, very supportive. And then so many of them do work in the Heron Morton booth, the food booth, and they have a lemonade booth that they is actually their part mm-hmm. of the food booth. And so there's a lot of volunteer work from the neighborhood there to help us out.
Well, you know, and something else, I mean, you mentioned parking because that's always a question because that is certainly an issue. On that same day, you've got the event taking place at the Harrison Center for the Arts. They've got their mm-hmm. Indie Handicraft Exchange as well as their concerts going on all day as well. And so there's a lot of great stuff going on downtown
yes.
that day. And so you can hit a lot of things. Where do you suggest for parking?
Actually, there is street parking all the way up Delaware, all the mm-hmm. way down Pennsylvania, and then the Boy Scouts have several lots that you can, they are pay, but not that expensive,
okay.
you know, usually $5 for the day.
And it's fair to say some of the residents in mm-hmm. the area nearby are very enterprising when it comes
yes,
to,
they are.
When it comes to finding parking spaces mm-hmm. in their yards, mm-hmm. for a fee, of course.
Dee, how long have you been involved with Talbot?
Oh, gosh. The Talbot Street Art Fair formerly mm-hmm. was called the Indiana Artist Craftsman, mm-hmm. and it's recently changed its name. But I've been in this town for 35 years, and I think that I've had some connection with it for very nearly all that time.
Mm-hmm.
Not as once upon a time, the Indiana Artist Craftsman had two groups. One was more closely affiliated with the art fair, and the other was more affiliated with perhaps artists
mm-hmm.
Who use it as a club to participate in other activities. But, gosh, I go way back,
mm-hmm.
30 years at least.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I know that with over 270 artists, it's hard to single anyone out, but going through the applications this year, anything that sort of stands out as far as that you can give us a preview of, either of you, as far as artists maybe who are either local or returning or coming back or ones that, you know, really stick in your mind?
Well, there are always a number of local favorites that are there year after year. I think that it's fair, and this isn't answering your question directly, but we do try to have a balance with the mm-hmm. exhibition so we don't have too many of one item. You know, mm-hmm. you don't want to have everything jewelry or everything
sure.
pottery. So we try to pick the very best of those various categories that we might have. And there are artist favorites who do come back every year. There's quite a number of local artists involved.
There are. And I know there was one man from Florida who was with us for 2 or 3 years. Sometimes you don't realize what a favorite somebody is until they're not there.
Mm-hmm.
And he couldn't come. And I had people coming up to the information booth saying, "Where is he? What did you do with?" And I mm-hmm. thought, I didn't do a thing with him. You know. Well, after the absence of the year, he called and he said, "I hope I'm going to get an application." And I said, "Yes, and I hope you're going to come."
Well, that's a good sign, though.
It is.
Mm-hmm. Now, Dee, I know, you've certainly been involved as an artist yourself, as an instructor. Joan, tell me about your involvement as president in this. How did you get involved yourself?
Well, years ago, and you talk about being involved, I think I've been involved since the ninth year.
So, okay, well.
Yeah, it's a long time. In fact, I was down the alley, so I do remember those days.
Mm-hmm.
I was one of those who said, oh, I'll do it. And it was the first time they said, would somebody go do a radio show?
Mm-hmm.
And that was...
That wasn't this show.
And that wasn't this one, no. Then I ended up doing some TV and then some other publicity. And the next thing you know, I had worked myself up to being pretty much steady on the committee and mm-hmm. then the assistant to the fair chairman and did that for several years. And then suddenly I was fair chairman.
Mm-hmm.
And thank goodness, I mean, I tried to give it away several times in my career, but I finally have two co-chairmen that are wonderful, Dale and Linda Cantrell, and they have helped so much. And I feel like if anything happened to me, if I dropped off the face of the earth, it would still go on for another 100 years.
So what is it that keeps bringing you back? I mean, what's your attraction, your interest? What's important to you about Talbot?
Well, I'll tell you what I like about this fair.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just for the artists, but it's also for the public. And it's free. We want the people to come and spend their money with the artists, not getting into the fair.
Mm-hmm.
And we want them to see what is current in art. And I believe I had met most every one of the original originators, I should say, of the fair. And they were all such dedicated people themselves that I felt like anything I could do to keep this fair going, I wanted to do this. And it's just become part of my heart. And I think they'll put it on my tombstone when I die. You know, not beloved wife, mother, or artist, but she was part of the Talbot Street Art Fair.
And Dee, let me ask you the same question. What keeps bringing you back?
Well, that's really a hard question, but I kind of like the mission of the Talbot Street Art Fair. I like the mission that it's for the artists,
mm-hmm.
and then I like the mission that any monies that are generated go for charitable, artistic causes. We benefit from it at the University of Indianapolis, but we're just only one of the institutions and organizations that benefit from the charity of the Talbot Street Art Fair Committee. And I think that's really important.
But, you know, that gives us an outlet, too, because when they have an exhibition mm-hmm. that we have sponsored, then it's open to the public, and the public can still have something from Talbot Street Art Fair beyond just the two fair dates. Like June,
and it continues know, on.
June 12th and 13th this year. So.
Well, mm-hmm. looking forward to June 12th and 13th.
Yeah.
Joan, Dee, thank you both very much for coming on Art of the Matter Day. It's been great chatting with you.
Thank you
very much. Our pleasure.
Travis DiNicola with Joan Kisner, president of Talbot Street Art Fair, Inc., and Dee Schott from their board of directors. The Talbot Street Art Fair takes place on June 12th and 13th. Hours are Saturday 10 to 6 and Sunday 10 to 5. Talbot Street Art Fair is located between 16th and 20th Streets and between Delaware and Pennsylvania Streets in the historic Heron Morton neighborhood. Admission to the fair is free. More information at talbotstreet.org, and let me spell that for you. That's TALBOT street.org. One T at the end of Talbot, talbotstreet.org. You're listening to The Art of the Matter on WFYI 90.1 FM Public Radio.
You've seen the names on dozens of projects and venues around town. Maybe you've wondered why Frank and Katrina Basile are so generous to the arts? Sharon Gamble invited Frank into our studios to find out what made him and his wife philanthropists.
Well, I'm not going to say take us back to the very beginning of your life, but I want to know what brought you from New Orleans to Indianapolis. That's not necessarily an intuitive path to me.
Well, actually, Sharon, it was a stroke of bad luck.
Okay.
Naturally, I'm kidding, because I absolutely love it here. Well, after I graduated from Tulane University in New Orleans, which is how the natives pronounce
it,
as you know.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Let me say it and get it right. New Orleans.
Close enough.
Okay. I'll work on that.
Right. And then I moved to Houston to go to work for the Continental Oil Company. And from there, after about a year and a half doing something I really wasn't cut out to do, I got bypassed for a promotion and wised up and left the company and went with the Ford Motor Company and loved it. They transferred me from Detroit, from Houston to Detroit and then to Indianapolis. And in Indianapolis, they were going to transfer me to Los Angeles. But at that point, early in my career, I was divorced. My kids lived here. And so I decided that it was more important for me to stay in Indianapolis, which I did. And it was a good decision. And then I went to work for the Gene Glick Company and worked for them for 33 years, and I'm now retired as of 2 years ago, which brings us to the present.
So with the oil company and then the car company, were you in sales, marketing?
Basically in marketing and sales,
mm-hmm.
Yes.
And you did that for the Glick Company as well, in a way?
Yeah, in a way, right. It was kind of interesting when I, because it was quite a change in what I was doing, because with Ford I was basically in sales, and left Ford actually, and was thinking about what I wanted to do, and I happened to live in an apartment community that I noticed was poorly managed.
Hmm.
This was during the divorce, moved out of my house into the community,
mm-hmm.
and so I thought maybe this might be an interesting thing to go into. And I went to talk with the apartment manager to ask her how she managed and how she got her training. And she said, oh, I really don't need any training, and so on and so forth. And it convinced me that maybe that was something I could do. So I decided to visit some other apartment communities, pretend I was a shopper and interested in moving in, and found out that none of them really handled things well, in my opinion. So I sent a letter to the Glick Company, to Gene Glick. As the owner of the most apartments in the city, I did not know him, but sent a letter saying, I have no experience in apartment management, but I have some transferable skills, and so on and so forth. And it turned out that 2 or 3 days before my letter hit, he had met with his executive vice president and decided that the company, now managing 11,000 units, was too big for him to continue managing personally, as well as overseeing construction, which at the time was the most important element, and they had no one internally they could promote. So they identified the characteristics of the person they needed to run the company, and he wrote on the top of my letter, Max, I think this is the human being you and I discussed the other night. So it was fortuitous.
I was just going to ask if you believe in fate.
Well, it looked like it worked out in that case.
or what's the old aphorism? And I don't remember what culture it comes from, but it says something to the effect of luck is when
preparation meets opportunity.
Meets opportunity.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yes.
I think your life story might be illustrative of that. When you were growing up, was your family involved in the arts? Do you remember were you taken to concerts or plays?
Not at all, Sharon.
Museums?
My family was very poor, and it took all of their time and energy to scratch out a living, did not have the time, the resources, or the knowledge, really, to introduce my 5 sisters and me to the arts. It wasn't on their radar at the time, and that's one reason why today, having come into the arts later in life, I'm so interested in helping to promote the arts, especially to people who otherwise might not have an opportunity to enjoy, participate in the arts.
Was there an aha moment when you were walking down the street and someone's window was open and you heard someone practicing an instrument when you said, wait, what is that?
Actually, it wasn't exactly an aha experience, but I was sitting in my office one day, and I got a call from Henry Ryder, who was with Barnes and Thornburg at the time, asking me if I would head the operating campaign for an organization known as the Indianapolis Art League.
Mm-hmm.
And I had no idea what it was or what it did or where it was located. But when I went out there and met Joyce Summers, the executive director at the time, all of a sudden my eyes opened up and I said, my God, I've been missing this all my life. And so that was really my initial turn on to arts and culture, as well as to active participation.
So I'm guessing that you probably applied the same sort of zeal that you used when you discovered that apartments weren't especially well managed, and you said, "Well, I'm going to make a plan, and I'm going to educate myself in what's going on in arts and culture." Did you do it that methodically, or?
I don't know if it was really done on a conscious level, but I do enjoy, and you picked up on that, I do enjoy learning about whatever I become involved with, especially if it's new to me, and this was new, and so I was really interested in learning about it. And fortunately, Joyce and Dave Thomas and others were willing to spend the time with me to help get me educated.
Mm-hmm. Somewhere along the way, you became a musician. How did that happen?
Well, I don't know where you got that idea.
A little bird told me you play the accordion.
Oh, my God.
Wait a minute. Are you separating accordions from music? Some people out there in the world do.
No, actually, that was like about 65 years ago when I was growing up, when I was in New Orleans. Actually, there was about a year and a half when I did take accordion lessons, believe it or not, but it never stuck. And today I can't play any instruments. I enjoy listening to music, and even that came rather late in life, an enjoyment and appreciation of music. But no, I have no musical talents, can't even carry a tune, frankly.
Were you the sort of person who your mom had to say, go and practice, you have a lesson next week and you're going to sound terrible unless you do your
Actually,
practice.
Had she pushed me, I probably would have. Uh-huh. But I really got no encouragement along those lines. Even taking the accordion was something that I had initiated, but did not stick to it.
What attracted you to it?
In New Orleans, in the Cajun country in South Louisiana, the accordion is more popular than it is in other places.
Sure.
And I did happen to hear it on the radio and see it at a couple of places, and it attracted me.
Yeah. You seem to have a life plan where you figured out how to make time, space, money, mind, heart available to anything that you really value. And I know that in another of your careers that you haven't spoken about as a speaker, as a motivational speaker, that you've talked about this. What advice would you have to someone who is in a career that's apart from the arts, an attorney, an accountant, a teacher, who wants to make arts and culture or any passion, who wants to make more time and space and money available? Do you have any kind of advice you would give us?
I think it's a matter of setting priorities. And we do have time for the things that are important to us. And I think we need to organize our time, though, and have a real prioritized to-do list every day that tells us what we need to do to accomplish the various things, including making a living, because that's very important, and yet to make time for the other things that are essential to our happiness, such as arts and culture, whatever else it is that we have identified. But I think when we do that, we can make the time to do these things in addition to working. For example, you mentioned speaking. That's been a significant avocational interest for me through the years, but it hasn't been my primary vocational interest, which has been for the last 33 years, as I mentioned, working for the Glick Company. But through trying to manage my time effectively, I've made the time to do the speaking because it was a priority.
It seems as though anybody I talk with who's involved, either as a volunteer or a staff member with an arts and culture institution, pretty much knows that if you look up Arts Philanthropist Indianapolis, Frank and Katrina Basile's pictures will appear as an illustration. And I suspect you spend some amount of time just fielding requests and interest from people who would love to have you involved in their campaign, heading their capital campaigns, or coming onto their board or their advisory board. Do you have a plan for different stages of your life? Because I know, in addition, you and Katrina have been naming venues over the last few years. Do you have kind of a plan for, okay, this is what we supported at this stage of our life, and we're doing these other things at this stage of our life?
I think it kind of evolves and hasn't really changed from the very beginning of our beginning to give to not-for-profit organizations. I know initially, as I mentioned, my first real involvement was with the Indianapolis Arts Center, and that was known then as the Art League.
Mm-hmm.
And we joined that partially because of the outreach effort that they have. And I suppose that initially motivated us in our giving was in connection with that, because one of my personal mission throughout my life has been to help others, particularly the disadvantaged in many ways, who are maybe minorities, economically disadvantaged, physically, mentally challenged, and so on, to become all they can become to achieve their potential. And initially, I did this through motivational speaking, as you alluded to before, and also writing books and articles. And in later years, I've tried to do this through volunteering with not-for-profits as well as our philanthropy. So more than the objective changing, the method for supporting the things we've always believed in has changed.
Mm-hmm.
And the method now is through volunteering with not-for-profit organizations, primarily on boards, and also through philanthropy. And, for example, now we translate helping people achieve their potential to such things as you know, being involved with the Phoenix Theater. For a number of years, we sponsored a program called a Festival for Emerging American Playwrights. And the purpose of it was to encourage and to assist new playwrights. And then Storytelling Arts, through Ellen Munns, very creatively came up with a program for storytelling, which does the same thing with storytellers. So, again, we're able to use our resources to accomplish our mission of helping people, assisting people, particularly get a start in life, in their career, in this particular case, in the arts and culture.
Who are your personal heroes? If you had to designate people to be on your personal board of advisors or directors.
Well, I would suppose that the number one person would have to be Gene Glick, who was like a father through the years, in addition to being a mentor and taught me so much, not only about the apartment business, but about life in general and business in general, and also in particular philanthropy, volunteering, and so on and so forth.
Sharon Gamble with philanthropist Frank Basile.
Hey, Travis, where are you registered?
Well, let's see, Sharon. I know you're not talking about wedding register.
I bet you're registered at the Chatterbox.
You
might be registered at the Best Chocolate in Town.
Best Chocolate in Town, and certainly at Victory Field.
At Victory Field? Okay.
You're talking about my birthday.
I'm talking about your birthday.
Well, you've got a birthday coming up soon.
Your birthday's, we both have, yours is
June 9th.
9th.
Next Wednesday.
And mine's June 28th.
Mm-hmm. It's our birthday
month. So mm-hmm. I think we might slip into today's calendar that we call
What'll We Do?
Some things you might find us doing on our birthday.
Oh, that sounds like a great idea.
It does indeed.
Mm-hmm.
What do you have?
Well, I'm thinking about all the great art openings that are going on, coming up in the next, actually some going on this weekend and some going on next weekend as well. Of course, there's First Friday openings and stuff for the 4th and then continue on this weekend. But next weekend on Friday, June 11th, 11th at Art Box Gallery. Very special arts. VSA Arts is hosting a special opening reception of Something to Crow About 2010, subtitled Making It Together, to honor, retiring VSA Arts CEO Jim Nolte. He is retiring, and so the party is on Friday, June 11th, and so they're going to be celebrating Jim, and then also there's going to be a silent auction of artwork, and they're also going to be celebrating the cute little fun book that Lois Mayne Templeton did with...
That title sounded familiar.
Yeah. With Phil O'Malley. Right. There's Something to Crow About. So there's going to be work there from that. It'd be a great party. Again, June 11th at the Art Box Gallery.
Very nice. Hey, do you know who Dan Patch was?
The horse.
Mm-hmm. He was a prize-winning racehorse from Oxford, Indiana, mm-hmm. and also the subject of a fun movie, a 1949 movie called The Great Dan Patch with Dennis O'Keefe, Ruth Warwick, and Henry Hull. And there is a free showing of The Great Dan Patch on Saturday, June 26th at 8 o'clock at the Garfield Parks Arts Center. Yeah. There's a love story. And, you know, it's our friend Eric Grayson, who is the film historian and programmer, always gives good insight. Dan Patch was so formidable that other horse owners refused to race against him, and he had to be carted around for exhibition races. As Eric says, that's about the extent of the historical accuracy in this film, which has a patched-in romance, et cetera, but it's a lot of fun. So there's also a vintage cartoon being shown on the 26th at 8 o'clock at the Garfield Parks Arts Center, and there's a free will donation. If you want to donate $2 to the fund, you can do that. So.
That sounds very fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, very cool. Hey, Gregory Hancock is at it again, and this time they are presenting Reincarnation on June 11th and 12th at the Pike Performing Arts Center. And Gregory Hancock will be bringing together sort of a variety of different pieces, including the Song of Bernadette, as well as other different religious pieces, religious-based pieces. The Book of Days, too, is based on a medieval theme of the Black Plague. And then there's also Monday Morning, which is Gregory's tribute to the crisis in Bosnia. And there's interesting ways that he ties all of this together in dance and ballet. The one piece titled The Western Wall, which is sort of a modern ballet inspired by prayers from the Western Wall in Jerusalem. So this is all taking place at Pike Performing Arts Center, Reincarnation, Gregory Hancock Dance Theater, June 11th and 12th, 8 p.m. both days.
Very fun. Hey, I have a couple of things going on at the Morris Butler House over the next month or so. One's for grown-ups and the other is for kids. The grown-up one, well, I guess you could bring teens or any youngsters you want to get inculcated in the ways of house cleaning. It's called Green Cleaning. It's a green cleaning workshop on June 15th from 5:30 to 7:30 at the Morris Butler House, which is at 1204 North Park Avenue. And this is in conjunction with their long-term exhibition about Naturally Green. You'll find some of the staples coming right out of your kitchen cabinets. Some of the things that you can use to clean with are actually safe enough to eat, so that you need not worry about using some of these green cleaning concoctions around your pets or your small children. And again, that's a green cleaning workshop, 5:30 to 7:30 on June 15th. And then in July, the Science of Baking, which is aimed more at children and homeschoolers. It's July 13th from 10 to noon. And it, among other things, explains what makes bread rise, why you have to knead the dough, and other interesting tidbits that help explain the science behind the food that you love to eat. So you can find out more about all of those things at IndianaLandmarks.org.
Sounds very, very cool.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of food, there's a concert titled Eggs, Chips, and Beans, which is... It's actually the title of a piece that's going to receive its Indianapolis premiere at the Rite of Swing on June 10th, which is the second annual French-inspired evening of chamber music and jazz by composer pianist Becky Archibald. And it also features performers from the ISO and the jazz community, and they are all getting together at IMOCA on Thursday, June 10th from 7 to 9. And, again, one of the pieces that is going to be premiered there is titled Egg, Chips, and Beans, and Becky can tell you the story.
And I'm sure it will be quite the story, too. Speaking of music, the concerts in the park up at Kokomo's Highland Park are starting up again. June 9th is the first one. It's Conductor's Choice. And it presents the retired Rum Runners Dixieland Jazz Band. Now, how fun would you have to be to play in a band called the retired Rum Runners Dixieland Jazz Band? And you can just go and expect a nice casual evening. Go and take somebody you like or find somebody you like when you go there and listen to fun music. That's June 9th, Kokomo Park.
My birthday, June 9th.
Hey, you could go to Kokomo's Highland Park on your birthday.
I could. So much to do. Something else to consider doing is in Irvington, a couple of interesting things going on. One, on June 5th, so if you're listening on Friday night to our show, then you could do this tomorrow from noon to 6. If you're listening to us Friday afternoon, you can still catch it out. The Irvington Guild of Artists Art Walk is taking place all around Irvington with Celebrate Irvington activities and local arts, artist work being displayed, as well as local merchandise throughout Irvington. And there are art walk maps at each merchant up and down East Washington Street. It is free to the public and family friendly, but also something worth checking out that the Irvington Guild of Artists is doing at the Bonnet Thompson Center is that they are doing essentially it's a show of people's original art collections from Indianapolis collectors, and part of the show is to encourage people to develop their own art collections, and that actually runs now through August 2nd.
And that kind of ties into the Helen Cox Kirsten collection over at the Idle Jar. So
there you go.
Not only make your collection, but think about where it's going to go ultimately. There you go. Hey, speaking of collections of things, the IMA is getting international press for the new 100 acres of Virginia B. Fairbanks Art and Nature Park, which is going to have its grand opening June 19th and 20th. And there's a weekend-long celebration that includes tours, live music, art-making workshops, a summer solstice program, and much, much more. You'll hear more about it on this program in the near future. But look at your calendar, and if you have room in there, make sure you get out for this grand opening. This is going to be pretty dramatic and pretty fun.
Can't wait.
Yeah.
Well, Sharon, there will be more things that we will come up with of ways to celebrate our birthday and yours, I'm sure, whether it's in June or not. Next week on that calendar we call
What'll We Do?
You're listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Indianapolis and Central Indiana. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. If your arts organization has an event or activity of which you think we should be aware, please contact us at least 3 weeks in advance. You can write us at The Art of the Matter, care of WFYI, 1630 North Meridian Street, Indianapolis, Indiana, 46202. Or you can email us at artofthematter@wfyi.org. You can also hear The Art of the Matter on wfyi.org.
Jersey Boys is the 2006 Tony Award-winning Best Musical about Rock and Roll Hall of Famers, The Four Seasons, Frankie Valli, Bob Gaudio, Tommy DeVito, and Nick Massey. This is the story of how four blue-collar kids became one of the greatest successes in pop music history. Jersey Boys will be coming to the Murat Theater in Indianapolis from June 9th through July 3rd of this year. Travis DiNicola spoke with Joseph Leo Buari, who plays Frankie Valli.
Joseph, great to have a chance to talk with you today.
Yeah, great talking with you, too.
Where are you guys right now? I mean, I know you're on tour, so where are you coming from?
We are on tour, and we're coming from Providence, Rhode Island.
Okay, good. Well, we are certainly looking forward to having you in Indianapolis.
We're looking to be there. We hope that there's not as bad allergies as we're all dealing with here.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
No, it'll all be gone by the time you get here.
Okay, perfect. If you guys can just clear out the air for us, we'd be very thankful.
I'll see what we can do. Not a problem.
Okay.
This has just got to be a really fun role for you, I would imagine.
Yeah, it's pretty incredible. I mean, you know, there's really nothing I can say but great things about it. It's being a rock star every night on stage, getting to pretend to be the real guy, the real Frankie Valli, which is pretty incredible.
Yeah, yeah. Had you let me ask you a little bit about your background first before getting the role of Frankie Valli in Jersey Boys. I'm assuming you studied acting and singing, musical theater.
You know, I'm not really someone who went down the path of studying musical theater. I was a acting major strictly at Emerson College in Boston, Massachusetts.
Mm-hmm.
And before that, I'm a California native, grew up in Los Angeles, and did a lot of work in the studios singing from the time I was 8 years old. You know, my voice is on tons of record albums and TV shows and movies. And so I've constantly been more of a vocalist than a musical theater performer. But I have been on stage since my parents put me on top of the fireplace mantle and I was dancing and singing up there. So,
now, had you always been a Frankie Valli fan or sort of become one through the course of this?
Well, you know, I don't know that I was a fan before being in the show. I knew the music.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know that it was all the Four Seasons. I didn't know that it was all Frankie Valli. But, you know, growing up, my dad would have the oldies station on in the car, and so for my generation, we heard the songs via the oldies station. And so I knew the songs. I didn't know that later on it was going to be such an integral part of my life.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I mean, I'm going on 3 years of doing this role in this show, and I am still really into the music, which is remarkable.
You know, I'm sure it must, you know, change for you, you know, from season to season, so to speak. But are there favorite songs, or do you have a favorite song to sing right now?
I mean, it does change, sort of, like you say, with the season, but or the city, depending on the crowd's reaction. Certain cities love certain songs and certain story points. They just love it, and other cities like different elements of the show. But the constant song that's always really just really gets me going is Working My Way Back to You. And I just love it. It's one of their later songs, one of the Frankie Valli songs that comes much later in his career. But it's got such a groove to it, and that's sort of been my constant from day one back in 2007. That song really gets me.
Yeah, I could certainly see it be a lot of fun to sing, I would imagine.
Yeah, it is.
Tell me a bit about the show, because it's more than just the music. It's the story of the a really remarkable story of these four guys.
Yeah, that's what people don't know, is that they are excited about the music. They're thrilled to get tickets to the show. I mean, this show, to get tickets to this show is, you know, we see people on the street 3 weeks into our run, in whatever city that we're in.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, the word is out. The word is at the street that Jersey Boys is the best show you'll ever see. And everyone knows the music.
Right.
But nobody knows the story, and that's what I think makes people just go nuts, is because you find out how it all happened, how they became the band, and really how the band sort of fell apart. So you get to learn all the inside scoop that was never published, that was never out there. You know, it was a different time back then when music was really, performers were just about performing, and the tabloids didn't just eat up their personal lives. So yeah, that's the cool part about the show. It's the story. And the music's great, too.
Mm-hmm. Now, how much of the... Or where did the story come from, I guess, is the question I have. I mean, how involved, you know, have Frankie Valli and the Four Seasons, you know, been in creating the story? I mean, do you know what they think about the show?
Well, you know, there's so many versions of how Jersey Boys came to be, how it happened.
Mm-hmm.
From what I understand is that Frankie himself had the idea.
Okay.
And he wanted to do something, and someone proposed they do a movie about, you know, the Seasons. But he wanted to do something that was more along the lines of what the Seasons did, which was tour, which was perform to live audiences, which was connecting to, you know, all the different generations that were out there listening to their music.
Yeah.
So I think that it went through so many different processes. They finally linked up with Marshall Brickman and Rick Ellis, who wrote the story, the book of the show. And Bob Gaudio, of course, one of the original Four Seasons members, is the writer of most of the songs, and he had a lot of different partners along the way,
mm-hmm.
but he's sort of the mainstay for all the Seasons sound. So when those forces aligned with Des McAnuff, the director, who Tony Award-winning director Des McAnuff, it sort of was, you know, the stars were in alignment, so to speak. And that's how Jersey Boys came to be. It started in 2005 in La Jolla, at La Jolla Playhouse,
mm-hmm.
and quickly, very quickly, went to Broadway and became the smash hit on Broadway that it still is today. I mean, it's still in what they call, I think it's what they call the $1 million club, where every week the show still raises that much money, makes that much money, doesn't raise, but makes that much money, because it is the hottest ticket to get in New York still. It's the hottest ticket to get on tour every city we go to. People can't even get tickets, but from what I understand, there's still tickets available in Indianapolis.
Still a few left, but it's interesting because I remember when it first opened on Broadway, and there wasn't that sense of like excitement, like this is going to be the biggest show ever. It was kind of almost like a sleeper for a little while, and then all of a sudden,
it's totally like the sleeper of Broadway. Nobody knew. It came at a time when there was a lot of what they called jukebox musicals,
mm-hmm.
and that's when the songs are from a catalog from a popular artist and they kind of inject them into a made-up story.
Right, right.
And those were not doing well, with the exception of Mamma Mia. Mamma Mia was the big jukebox musical smash sensation. And Jersey Boys actually was the opposite. Jersey Boys tells the real story and places the songs into the story the way they really happened. We never stand there and sing to each other a la musical theater style. We perform the songs in nightclubs, on Ed Sullivan, on American Bandstand, in the concert venue, in the recording studio, you know, the way the songs happen.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like a lot of fun. Hey, have you had, I mean, how do you prepare to play, you know, Frankie Valli? I mean, that's a pretty big role. I mean, it's a big role to take on, you know, and certainly when you
huge
have someone
role.
Who's...
It's huge. You know, every role in this show is pretty huge because they're real life people, and three of the four original members are still alive.
Mm-hmm.
So you have that responsibility that not only are you going to have to do a good job as a performer, but you need to honor the person who is the reason why you're working.
Right.
So it's crazy the amount of responsibility that I personally have that I put upon myself probably. But
have you had a chance to meet Frankie Valli? Or?
Yeah, I've met Frankie a bunch of times. Well, I guess I haven't met him a bunch. I met him once, but I've visited with him a bunch. But
mm-hmm.
He's great. You know, he's actually a pretty normal, mellow, low-key guy, nice as can be, not really flashy,
mm-hmm.
just a real guy who really worked really hard to get to where he is today. And, you know, Frankie himself is still on tour. He still goes out, tours, you know, huge venues and smaller casinos and different things like that, and you know, he brings just as much of a crowd as Jersey Boys does because his music and his sound, it's like no other. And I think that everyone identifies with it, and everyone knows if they can see Jersey Boys and they can see Frankie Valli in a concert, they know they're going to have a great night, you know?
Absolutely. So, you know, it sounds like it's just a ton of fun for you to do this show, and it sounds like it's a great show that the audience is going to really enjoy a lot here in Indianapolis.
Oh, they're going to love it.
Yeah. Joseph, let me ask you this. For your hair, for this performance,
yeah,
can you tell us anything special about it? I mean, you know, I mean that's pretty famous hair to be pulling off as well.
It's pretty famous hair, let's be honest. Yeah. He's got a good head of hair. They all did, those Italians. There's really no special tricks. It's get it as you know, coiffed as you can to match the master. I think he just woke up every day and his hair was perfect. But we go through some serious product.
Yeah, I would imagine you would.
At Jersey Boys.
Okay. Well, Joseph, it's a real pleasure getting a chance to chat with you. I hope you have a great rest of the run in Providence, and we're looking forward to having you here in Indianapolis.
Thank you. We can't wait to get there.
Travis DiNicola with Joseph Leo Buari, who plays Frankie Valli in Jersey Boys. Jersey Boys will be coming to the Murat in Indianapolis right here from June 9th through July 3rd. For ticket information, visit BroadwayAcrossAmerica.com, BroadwayAcrossAmerica.com. Thanks for joining us today. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Buscelli Wallerab Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
Please listen to The Art of Matter again next Friday at 8 p.m. and Saturday at 4 when I chat with music promoter and producer Mark Butterfield about a new CD he's putting out featuring local musicians raising money for Alzheimer's. Also, I'll get to find out about the historic Meridian Park tour of Homes and Gardens.
And of course, we'll have our arts calendar we call
What'll We Do? So please listen next Friday at 8 and Saturday at 4 for The Art of the Matter here on WFYI for your information.
You've been listening to The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support from listeners like you and from the Palladium at the Center for the Performing Arts, opening in January 2011. The Art of the Matter. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. Today's Art of the Matter was produced and edited by Travis DiNicola. The Art of the Matter on 90.1 FM, Indianapolis.